Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Maximilian Mansfield is the president and CEO of USL newcomers Brooklyn Football Club and executive director of Two Bridges Football Club, a non-profit dedicated to enriching New York's inner city youth for a first-class soccer environment, intense academic preparation and leadership development. But before that, he was a young player with a dream of becoming pro, and that dream took him to Germany with stints at the academies of Schalke and Cologne. Max shares the impact that dream ending had on his mental health, the career path it then led him on back in the US, and how a phone call from the blue not only presented a way back into the game, but provided an opportunity to be of service, which would change the trajectory of his life and ultimately dozens of others. If you enjoy the podcast, there's more information on how you can support its growth at nplhmag.com. Over to Mac. How you doing, Mac?
Good. Can you hear me all right?
Perfect, mate. Yeah, how about that end?
Good. Yeah. No, I went into a meltdown because I had like 10 million tabs open. And the first thing it said is close all the tabs. And I was like, shit, man, I'm already failing.
It's not a good way to start, right?
I was like, damn, man, this guy's going to kill me. So.
You're a fellow closely cropped, bearded guy. I know not to mess with men like that.
Yeah. No, not by choice, but yeah, I feel like we all have a bond.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how's the day started for you over there?
Chaos already, but good, man. It's every day is chaos until mid August, till we kick the first ball. It's like just building everything, awareness, excitement, telling the story. It's been a journey.
That's the women's Brooklyn FC kicks off in August, right?
Yeah, so women's Brooklyn will kick off in August, men's in March.
It'd be good to get into what all of that looks like in starting a football club with, from a blank slate.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to hear how you found yourself in that seat in the first place.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? I know we've got an hour and there's like probably 30 odd years to go back in, but yeah, what does that journey look like from your introduction to the game and I guess what it means to you that led you to this kind of role?
I was born in Germany, but grew up in New York City and, played an array of sports growing up. Baseball and soccer, the way American kids do. But my mom only knew soccer, so she would only come to those games. And like she could only really, she didn't know what to do with baseball. And then my dad was into soccer as well. So it kind of like brought me down that path. You know, you crave your parents' approval and satisfaction when it was kind of like she would ask me a million questions about the soccer game and not much about the baseball. I kind of knew where my path was headed. So, and from there on just became addicted to it, obsessed with it. Played over in Europe for a number of years, left high school early to go play and chase the dream of playing in Germany, and got to play at some high profile youth academies, spent some time at Schalke and at Cologne, before ultimately, realizing that it wasn't going to maybe allow me to get to the level where I had envisioned it and ran into some injuries. And then at 19, I made the decision to come back to the U.S. and study in university. So I played soccer at Columbia and then Cornell University. Studied economics and football or soccer took more of a back seat in my life. and really, you know, mental health wise, just struggled to come to terms with that, struggled to, you know, have an identity beyond being the kid or a kid that played soccer and was obsessed with it and that leveraged everything to play professionally. And now, you know, you're just a guy who's above average with numbers and didn't really know where I wanted to go. So upon graduating university with a degree in economics, you know, there weren't really football jobs. It wasn't really an industry where you could say, hey, I'm going to take my degree and now go make a living in it. It was that was either be a coach or, you know, the MLS was filled with NFL executives and guys that had played, you know, at the MLS that were now working. It's very different to the landscape now. So went into the financial world, spent some time there, in M&A, and but never really felt it was my calling or something that excited me or was my identity. But there was no alternative. There was nowhere else to go, really. And then on the side, a club in Germany had reached out to me and said, hey, Max, are you interested in playing? I was in my mid-20s at this. Are you interested in playing? It was like a fourth division team. Would you want to come out and play? And I said, look, I've had three groin reconstructions. My days of playing are over. And they said, do you have anybody? Do you have anybody else? And I said, yeah, there's a guy I play pickup with. I could send him over. He seems like an ambitious kid. He was about a 22-year-old kid. And I sent him over, and they called me, and they said, this is incredible. How is this guy that good? How can he play at this level? And that was sort of my aha moment that, oh, there's a market gap, right? There's talent in America. And it's my responsibility to cultivate it. So then I started to work on the agency side, help young players get over to Europe, young American players, help them get through FIFA clearance and all that stuff. And then at some point just said, hey, this is what I want to do. I don't want to work in football. I don't know how to sustain, but I need to do something that, you know, I get excited about, something that on a Sunday night, I'm so excited to get to work on Monday. And the only thing I knew for that was football. So I left a normal job and worked full time on this agency side, and then started a charity or a nonprofit that supports inner city football players. So obviously soccer at a young level is privatized here, and there's a high cost to buy in. And I just felt that we're leaving so many players behind with that model. And could I, with my contacts in the financial world, could I create a club that could support over 100 players that don't pay anything to be involved and play at a high level and get academic tutoring and leadership development? So I started that, and, you know, those two projects, you know, set my personal life on fire. But professionally, you know, two years later, and any dreams of retiring also early are also out the window. But, you know, 2 years later, coming up on 3 years, you know, here we are. I mean, so easy to laugh about it now, but yeah.
Yeah, mate, that's a pretty full-on few years.
Yeah.
And it's a credit that you're sitting upright.
Yeah.
After all of that, it sounds like you need a lie down.
Yeah.
There's a lot to pick through there. So I'll go back. Yeah, just picking up on the return to Germany. You've gone over there to follow a dream of playing, and you're going home in many ways to your birth country. But is there, what are the feelings around coming home when it's kind of becoming evident that it's not going to work out? Is there any sense of we know what it's like when we're 19 or, you know, whatever it is, a bit of the ego is easily bruised. And yeah, was there like a sense of, like, yeah, is there a sense of disappointment and failure that comes with that? Or are you like, okay, you know what, that's that, I'm going home and let's just crack on? Are you dealing with any kind of sense of loss of something
there? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was really, it hit my mental health pretty hard. I didn't, you know, and you turn to the typical vices that any 18 or 19 year old kid would, you know, you don't really seek help. And, you know, I stress it so much with these guys now that I work with, that, you know, you need to A, have a plan B. I was fortunate that my plan B was really good and kind of fell onto my lap. But I wasn't mentally able to cope with it. I wasn't, you know, I had failed. I had let myself down. But I had no understanding as to why, or any clarity. So for me, it was about a 4-year process that I really had to unpack all this, that like, what is my life going to look like now? I mean, I used to dread the worst day of the year was my birthday, because your birthday as a footballer is like one more year that you haven't made it, and you're just becoming expired. It was dreadful. I mean, September 10th, and I remember by like the 5th, it was just like anxiety, tears, it was hell. Where now it's like I look forward to my birthday. Finally, it took me about 10 years, but.
Wow. I mean, like, what's the, well, thanks for sharing that. First of all, I appreciate that, but what does the way out of that look like? Cause that's a pretty, I mean, I've been in a similar situation to that myself just recently, not related to any kind of failing football career, a marriage. It's a failure of another kind. And the way out of that, well, it looks like there isn't one for a bit. So yeah, how have you stood up there? Have you got back on your feet? And what's the route? If you're not playing, which is your usual go-to for, I guess, like, you know, self-expression and almost like a place of solitude, I guess, in some ways, like, what's the way out if you haven't got that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I wish I discovered it earlier, but to lose yourself in the service of others. I think that's the most straightforward path. And that's where, you know, this charity or nonprofit side really, you know, gave me energy. It's very intoxicating, to see that, you know, your ability or your touch or your understanding of this as, you know, can completely change somebody's trajectory and change their lives. And, you know, it became very easy to kind of love myself and celebrate myself, things that I just wasn't able to do in years prior.
Are you, that's a really, well, what you just said is really interesting, losing yourself in the service of others. Are you familiar with a guy called Alfred Adler?
I know the name.
Hungarian.
Yeah.
So he he's a long gone. Anyone listening to this that's listened to multiple episodes, they'll be fed up with me banging on about this guy. But I discovered him last year, and he's a long since gone Hungarian psychotherapist who argues that service of others and being a part of a community are the root of self-worth and self-confidence, basically, and letting go of the what you can do for yourself and looking at what you can do for others. So it's really interesting that you touch on that and that you experience what he claims you will if you just engage in that. What was the like the touch point in you finding that? You say you wish you'd found it sooner, but like, what led you to the act of service?
I think my own, maybe even my own insecurities. I didn't think it was possible. I didn't see myself as one, to connect with like a younger generation. I felt there would always be a disconnect. It was always kind of like myself first. So when the opportunity arose, it just was like two worlds coming together. I realized that there was, again, this gap in like football development, right? And then this personal side. And look, I got to, neither of my parents went to university. So I'm living proof that, like, especially in America, football can be a vehicle, right? Football can be a vehicle to a better situation in your life. And being able to provide that pathway for other players, whether it's professionally in Europe, whether it's going to a better university, I just see what it could do for a young man. So I think that I was easily able to believe in what I was preaching because I had just lived it myself. So
when you're in the, like, you've moved into finance post college, are you then feeling any more unease there, like you're moving further away from, like, you're further away from alignment, I guess, at that point, even though it's ended up an asset for what would come further down the line? Like, are you still struggling with that sense of identity when you're in that landscape? Because it's quite a shift, right, from an athletic environment to a corporate one.
Yeah, look, I don't think alignment was really a relevant topic. It was, I was just numb. I was blank to it. It was kind of identity crisis more, you know. It just simply wasn't something that I would get excited about. But I don't think alignment or concern, you know, when you go so far off the sphere of what you thought your pathway was, you kind of stop, you know, counting or evaluating, and you just roll with it.
Did it feel like a risk when the opportunity came up through that phone call from Germany to step away from it? And when you had that kind of aha moment, I can be an influence here for other people, or was it a case of that's all I needed, was like a whiff of goal, so to speak, and I'm gone?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was an aha moment, because I honestly didn't think it would pan out. I didn't think it would work. So it wasn't like the switch flipped. But it definitely awoke a thought of like, is there something there? Is there a way to do this? And when that picked up some steam, that side of the business, which was just a side hustle, right? Like, you know, you got your 9 to 5 and your 5 to 9, it kind of became my 5 to 9. And when that started to pick up some steam and there was some interest, and then being on the field again with younger players, like when those two kind of hit, it was like, there's no turning back. There is no way back. This is like your calling. And very irrational, because there was no business plan or money or thought or anything like that. It was just very much like you must, you have to. So
that's really interesting. So that you just figure that out later. You know, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Figure it out along the way.
No, I think that's one of the benefits of growing up in New York. That comes with a lot of the downsides of growing up in a big city, but you kind of, you're pleasantly naive to think there's something here, that I can do this. Somebody will back it. Somebody will get excited about it. Somebody will support it, right? It's kind of the city of dreaming in that sense. So always have like had that knack that like, yeah, if I'm excited about it and there's other people that are excited about it, like the business plan will fit in the right places. That'll unveil itself.
Yeah. Is there like a kind of crackle of possibility in the air in a place like New York? I guess, right? Or maybe even in just like America in general. It's like
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Going back to the thought of, is there a way that this role over here from like the finance period can aid changing the lives or giving access to, you know, like 100 or so players and open up the game and possibilities and all that kind of thing within the community? What's the pathway from the fault to then it taking shape?
You know, there was an in-between phase where I, you know, I second-guessed myself. There wasn't a lot of money coming in. There was no money coming in. We hadn't really done a lot of, like, deals, and there wasn't a lot of support on the financial side. And then we took a group up, so we were spread across three teams. And we took a group up to play New England Revolution. So they play in, like, the Gillette Stadium where Tom Brady and the Patriots play, and we're supposed to play their under-19s. And I have like a ragtag group from the Bronx that's wearing like t-shirts to play. And I'm like, this is hell. Like, why am I doing this? At this point, we're like 8 or 9 months in, no money. I'm driving this van up to New England with these kids. And I'm thinking like, what's going on? And at that point I had a job offer. Well, two, I had one to go back into finance and then one to work at the MLS, both getting more lucrative as I'm driving this van. So we get up there and we somehow win the game, right? We win this game. And that bought me like another 12 months. We beat New England Revolution in front of, you know, in a huge stadium, with these kids. And it was just like, how could I not? Like, if I ever needed validation, and I wrote on the way home, we stopped for pizza and I pull up my phone and I wrote, you know, the guy who leveraged to get me the job. And I said, look, I'm flattered, but unfortunately, like, I need to give my life to this for another year. Thank you so much for everything. And at that point it was like full steam ahead. So we opened up a residential program in Germany, where players could essentially do like a gap year program like I did. And then we expanded the nonprofit side to you know, just more players and more infrastructure. And then for a year, I went all in on that.
Well, yeah, that's quite a commitment and a journey. Yeah. And putting all your chips in it. I mean, there's the security coming at you in the off, you know, in the form of a role or two roles. Even one in the MLS is giving you a route into the game, right?
Yeah.
But you've committed to the community aspect, which I guess speaks of your commitment to service.
Yeah.
Where you can be more impactful than in a more corporate landscape like MLS, I guess. Yeah, that's really, well, inspiring. And I think the image of you in a van driving up to this game, going one way thinking, what the hell am I doing, versus the way back thinking, how the hell can I not do this, is it's amazing what can happen in 90 minutes, right?
It's crazy. No, it's, and that's why I'm such a believer in what football can do for a person, for a community, it's just so powerful. I mean, I can't watch the video today. There's a video, and my dad came on this journey with me as a photographer and also didn't need to do this at all. And there's a video of them, I'll send it to you, where after the goal is scored, we're just like, how did this happen? Because we're down 3-2 and we won 4-3. And this goal happens and it's like, I get chills when I watch it. So it's wild what football can do, man.
I can only imagine what those kids were thinking on the way back as well. I think pretty amazing. I mean, that they'll dine out on that for the rest of their lives.
Oh my
right?
God, yeah.
Getting a club off the ground from scratch. I know we're shifting slightly.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting a club off the ground from scratch in a city like New York, how do you even know where to begin?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the first thing is there an appetite? Is there a market for it? You know, like, London is a great blueprint for us that, you know, holds so many professional football clubs. So clearly there's a market or there's a corner to edge out for it in New York. You know, I've been primed for the role because, you know, I've had to start a youth club, granted, on my own, but, you know, the same elements. I mean, making it attractive, the marketing side, the financial side, player development. What is the ethos of the club? What do we stand for? You know, those are all really good learning experiences that go into this now. I mean, I've worked at a couple of professional clubs in the past and have a good insight on what works and what doesn't work. And then also just the expansion and the growth of the game here leaves me optimistic and bullish on what can happen, right? I mean, the World Cup is coming, so it's kind of like the pinnacle. And how do you reverse engineer from that to where we are now and say, where do we fit in 2026, right? Are we nobody? Are we Brooklyn FC? Or are we kind of this alternative, you know, club that, oh, wow, that's also another way that a club can be built out that's maybe a little bit atypical from the MLS setup we're used to?
Does the USL in general, do you think, offer scope for that alternative approach?
Yeah, I think what they've done a really good job of is let these clubs carve out their own organic identity, right? You look at like an Oakland Roots or a Detroit City, you know, from their kit design to their ethos to their fan base, it's all very, very different. It's clash of cultures. It's built for their city, and it's not a cookie cutter model that you try to place in every city with the same approach. And I think that's what makes it exciting. And that's what reminds me maybe a little bit more of your smaller, you know, European style club that is an extension of your community.
Are you drawing anything from your time in Germany and the, not necessarily the like the infrastructure of a club, but the fan culture around it in what you're trying to build at Brooklyn?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wouldn't say Germany as a whole, but like I was born in Dortmund, so Borussia Dortmund's obviously a really good case study for us.
Yeah, good place to start.
Yeah, high bar, but more so in terms of accessibility, right? I don't know if you, I think it was Newcastle. When they hosted Newcastle, Newcastle gave like a shout out to say, hey, you made the away ticket prices for Champions League under, I want to say, 25, under 30 euros. And nobody does that anymore, right? And again, it's access, it's blue collar, it's authentic. It's not for the tourists that come to Dortmund, right? We have so many season tickets and I still have my season ticket. So it's about access. It's about, you know, the fan supporters groups having a voice on the ticket prices, right? Like that's very real. And so I think for us, it's, you know, what can we do similar to Dortmund that makes everybody feel like this is theirs, this is their club and not, you know, just a plastic club for lack of a better term.
Yeah. So using that term, their club, how do you go about building that connection with the community before there is a club to go and see?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think being active in the community is a big one. Showing up to things, listening to people, valuing those immigrant communities that really are the bedrock of Brooklyn, or New York City, let's call it. So for example, where, you know, some teams always play international friendlies in the summer, right? You fly over a team from, I remember Cosmos did St. Pauli. I went to that game. It was really cool. And another team did Wolfsburg. But our approach is, let's bring over the Ecuadorian team. Let's bring over the Jamaican team. Let's bring over the ones that maybe get overlooked, but their populace in Brooklyn or Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan is through the roof. So this summer we'll play against an Ecuadorian top side. We're in touch with a Salvadorian team. We're going to bring over the Jamaican U23s to play us and kind of make these initial impressions as like, this is a celebration of football. It's not about us beating the Jamaican team. This is about tying these communities together and stamping that, you know, this is ours. And then the second part, I think, is applying or showcasing that there's talent in our backyard in Brooklyn, right? And it's our mission or our obligation to cultivate it before we travel through all corners of the globe and sign journeymen. What's in our backyard? Can we make pathways exist that never existed before? Can an inner city kid from Brooklyn, you know, play in front of 8, 7, 10,000 fans and then move on to Europe? I mean, I think that's pretty special. And, you know, we're on track to do that by having the youth academy now built out for the past few years.
Yeah, it's an interesting flip, isn't it? In like creating that homegrown talent and exporting rather than bringing in, like you say, a journeyman that's maybe on the way out. It's not really going to be attached to the area or the club as much as a local player would be.
Yeah.
So just sticking with the friendlies, and you mentioned like the U23 Jamaican team, Ecuadorian team, this kind of thing. Is that like, that taps into something you said earlier on about the game being a vehicle for good. That's also using it as a, rather than the St. Paulies and the Wolfsburg and that kind of thing, these friendlies are using the game as a conduit almost for the community to access home.
Totally. And I think for all that US football sometimes lacks in meaningful matches, I'll call it, right? Because you just don't have the presence of relegation. I think it is a really, and I think it will come, but I think right now is a really good incubator phase where it's like, how can you drive your community? How can you get people excited? How can you play an attractive brand of football, right? Like, it blows my mind sometimes when teams play like ugly football in the US because it's like, you have no threat of relegation. Like, where else in the world has a team lost 13 games and kept their manager? I mean, I don't know anywhere, right? So it's like kind of like, at the very least, like, play exciting football, play with exciting young players that, you know, we can see in 2 years playing Champions League. I mean, you know, not that it should always be a farm league, but there is an element of like, you do have some kind of like, you know, creative freedom to say, hey, this is what we want to be as a club, even if it doesn't work immediately, where, you know, in Europe, you lose 4 games and you pack your stuff.
Yeah. How many hats are you wearing on a day-to-day whilst this is all taking shape?
Yeah, I mean, we've now onboarded and hired a bunch of really, really exciting people and a team that I'm so excited to work with, whether it be tickets or marketing or sporting directors. So it's kind of like me now, you know, letting the ducky swim and being a little bit more hands-off, just wanting to set everybody up for success. But, you know, I'm still wearing my hats and everything. I mean, I spent my whole weekend in at youth games in the rain. And then today we're working on like a ticket sales strategy. So it's all over the place, you know. It's still all the hats and I still want to be really dialed into everything. But yeah, at some point I need to like scale back and focus on the high level stuff. But it's easier said than done.
Yeah, I bet once you've kind of, yeah, you've touched on most of those points through the club's development, there's a little difficulty in letting go of those, right? You become invested in it.
Yeah.
The bigger it comes. What have the learnings been for you throughout the process? I guess about a club and what goes into it and maybe even what it's taught you about yourself in some ways.
You know, the challenge with like Brooklyn and New York is it's not about getting people, right? There's millions of people here. It's about getting people to care and giving them a reason to care. And that's a very different narrative, right? Just because you set up shop and you're now a football club doesn't mean they're all flocking to you. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on in Brooklyn on a Saturday night that's not football, where, you know, in other clubs in America or Europe, it's one of the only shows in town. So understanding what it means to get people to care. And then I would say, when I speak to people in person, just the excitement they have, that's what's hit me the most, that, you know, there is certainly an appetite for this. It's just about, you know, tying into why should people care? Why is this different than the other club the city promised us that's not in the city? So, you know, we're having to be very, very sensitive of that. And then just learning about women's soccer. That's been the biggest learner for me, the biggest thing of understanding. Like, I admit I'm not an expert on it. I follow it and I'm a supporter of it, or have always been, but only now the last 6 months I've gotten like the crash course and fully understand pay gaps and demands and excitement and roster building and levels. And that's been so exciting to get behind. And part of the reason I was such a fan and so optimistic on, you know, us launching with a women's team on a really short timeline.
Yeah, well, so that was a considered decision to go with the women's team first.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the opportunity presented itself from the league, that we're one of the clubs not building a stadium. We're playing in an existing stadium. So that, you know, narrowed down, obviously, the candidates that we were ready to go by summer. We had the infrastructure in place to play and train. And I've just seen the growth and spoken to some experts about the women's game. And just feel like the time is now, even if, you know, there's going to be some slip ups on a 4 or 5 month runway. I just think the product we can put out and to get people, you know, get the train moving, for me, the time is now on women's football. The time was yesterday.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Do you think that, so that you plug yourself into the community when you mention you're out talking to people about this, and do you think that the fact that you're a New Yorker assists in getting people invested in the club when they've had these promises before that you mentioned?
I mean, I don't think it helps me from a sales pitch, just saying it or dropping it. I think it helps me inherently understand the frustration, right? I've lived through the frustration. I grew up through the frustration. So I think it helps me take a temperature of where these people are coming from, understanding, football aside, what's happened to communities in Brooklyn, what gentrification does. So I think I understand a little bit more, like, you know, what are the feelings and what do people want, and what does a community need to feel validated within our project and our scope? So I think that, granted, I think you could have gotten it from being from another city or urban place, but understanding how cultures interact and live side by side, I think that gives me a major leg up in just what this should look like.
How open is the club to the community? Like, what do you foresee in terms of interaction with that? Like, this is your act of service in many ways in bringing a club to Brooklyn. It's a internationally renowned borough of one of the most popular cities in the world, and it rightly deserves to have its club there. And you're providing this community, playing opportunities, jobs, all that kind of thing that come with it. But then, like, what do you foresee the role of the community playing for the club, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, look, the hardest thing in football is managing, you know, it being a viable business and also not, you know, quote unquote, selling out. So managing both, and I've been fortunate enough to work in both sides of community development and business. So it still has to exist. I think, supporting the community initiatives that don't have to do with football is going to be our key, right? Like listening to the community, what is it that they're needing, wanting, that we can provide a service for? Because ultimately, like, you know, it's a celebration. We need them to attend games for this to function. So look, I think that's an ever evolving question. And if you check back with me in 6 months, there'll be, you know, initiatives that we have carried out. But I think just having the pro players, you know, be in the community, like, I don't think that's enough anymore, doing a couple appearances, right? I think everybody's that's a bit of a tired approach. So like, I don't remember what a club it was, but there was a, I think it was Oakland, there was a federal funding cut for schools. So a lot of schools in that community weren't getting art supplies, because arts and gym are always the first two things to get cut. So on the first, I want to say the home opener, they asked everybody, they used the crowd or the community, asked everybody to bring crayons and colored pencils and markers. They asked every single person. And they, you know, funded the art budget for, I think it was half the year or the whole year. And not to say that that's the carbon copy, but it has nothing to do with football. That just has to do with community and caring. So I think those sorts of initiatives and that sort of thought of understanding where's the need, right? Like, do you need, you know, our center forward to hand out meals at Christmas? Great. Like, we'll do that if that's where it is. But if it's something deeper, like, Let's unpack that.
Yeah, that's a great example. You're right, it's nothing to do with football, but it's using football as the tool, right? This is how you get this many people together through football, and now we're all together. What good can we do?
Yeah.
Outside of it. Yeah. Quite warming to hear that kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
It's massively, I mean, I'm in England and I support a Premier League club, West Ham.
All right. Are you in London?
I'm outside now, but I grew up in a borough called Barking and Dagenham.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which is on the outskirts. Yeah, you know the one?
Yeah.
So they actually train not far from where I grew up now.
Isn't that song by Rams, Barking, isn't that a reference to there? Or do you not know that song?
I don't know the song. Can you send it to me?
Yeah, it is. It for sure is. It for sure is.
Oh, yeah, send it.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, brief history lesson for you, it was the biggest housing estate in Europe.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's kind of like a tougher. I've been there.
Designed as an overspill for London.
Right.
Yeah. Not much to see. Like anywhere, there was a bit of that kind of gentrification going on.
Yeah.
It's good links into
like East
city,
London.
So it's not.
Yeah, East London as a whole has kind of been. I lived in Chelsea and Battersea for a bit, Battersea Park, and it was a good time in London.
Yeah, I used to work near there actually. I used to work in Chelsea, and lived in Clapham. Battersea.
Oh man,
to go home. Nice part of town.
Nice part of town. It was cool.
Yeah, you weren't slumming it.
No. All right. Oh my God. It's cheaper than New York. That's what people don't realize. I was living like a king. Like,
even the boats down there now. Do you know Bear Grylls?
Yeah, of course.
He lives on one of the boats somewhere down there.
Crazy. I went to a Dulwich Hamlet match, and that like inspired me. I was like, this is insane.
Another great example of the community of a club.
Yeah,
and its community.
It was crazy.
Kind of existing in harmony.
Oh my God! I played for Westfield in Woking. Don't ask me how I wound up there. That's a podcast.
Were you asking yourself that when you were thinking I was at Schalke once upon a time, and now I'm in Woking.
When I'd get off that train station, I would always think, where on earth am I? But I was like 24, 24, like mid 20s. So it was less about like playing Champions League. It was more just like, this is just hilarious. Like, this is just, this is just comical that this exists. So no, I loved it.
When were you living in Battersea? So I know we've gone off track now. I'm just curious, like, what sort of timeline was that?
right before COVID. So what is that, like 2020?
Oh, later. Okay, yeah. I was there maybe like 10 years before that. So
it was good times.
No crossover. I thought the trail might have been warm.
No.
But yeah, going back to the West Ham point, it's like there is that kind of generic, oh, look what the club's doing for the community and all that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, as you should, because you're a multi-million pound organization. But at the same time, you've got mascots on the pitch before a game and they're all paying 500 quid for the pleasure. And it's like, it doesn't really leave a nice taste in the mouth.
It's,
you know,
tough. But it's also why the Premier League is by ahead of everybody else, right? And like, that's the decision. Like, Germany's probably fallen too far behind with being like community centric and falling behind the eight ball. And Premier League is probably too far ahead and too juiced up, where it's like, there's probably a sweet spot in there where you can be about your community and be honest with your ticket prices and make this for all, and but also stay relevant, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
I get both sides.
Yeah. They are what they are, right? And it's easy to forget what they both are when you're kind of engrossed in a game for 90 minutes
totally.
As well.
Totally.
You can just boil it down to the football, even for a little bit, if you just try and cancel out that noise.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up, I'm aware of the time and you've got a football club to run. but I'm curious to know how this makes you feel in yourself now that, you know, you've come away from a life as a player earlier on in life, and it had its impact, and you've found your lane within, well, the game and within life in general. How does that sit with you?
Yeah, I mean, it there hasn't been time to reflect. It's been a non-stop since I've kind of gone in. There's moments where it's, wow, like, you know, look at the growth, and it's amazing, and it all makes sense. It all fits into the puzzle now. So there hasn't really been time to reflect and look back. It's only been looking ahead. But I know I'm going to be in football, and whether it's, you know, I'd like to build out Brooklyn and bring it to a point where it functions and it's changed how the American sports fan, soccer fan views what a club can be, you know, shake things up. And once it's steady, you know, hand it on to the next confused but excited footballer, finance guy, that does have the energy and the hairline to run this thing. But until then, I'm guns a-blazing, and there hasn't really been time to look back, only ahead. I'm so grateful for our ownership group, and I really mean this, in believing in my vision, in giving me the creative canvas to carry this out. I always say that, you know, when I was 14 or 15, I'd run home after school and play Football Manager on my mom's like slow, shitty work computer. And I could build my team and transfers and ticket prices and youth academy. And now, you know, 15, 20 years later, I get to live it in real life. So it's as good as it gets, and I'm grateful for it. And it dawns on me every day how fortunate I am.
Right, and it's, I guess it's a good thing for the people of Brooklyn that your mum and dad did not care for baseball. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening, right?
So. Yeah, no, it's true. A couple hip surgeries less, but it's all part of the joy. All part of the joy.
Yeah. You don't get through this unscathed, mate. No. Unfortunately.
Not at all.
Mac, I've really enjoyed this chat, mate. I really appreciate the vulnerability and openness earlier on as well. Great to learn more about the route that took you here and what all of this looks like rather for Brooklyn, and really excited for August and 2025 for the men's team as well.
Of course,
I'll be rooting for you, definitely.
I appreciate it. I'll send you some stuff. You just shoot me over your address, and I'll send you that video for the revolution.
Oh yeah, cheers, mate. Yeah, have a great day. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.